Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Elena Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight, we talk about how one woman triumphed against all odds by becoming the first woman professional boxing judge in the world. Her name? Carol Polis. Carol Polis is the first woman professional boxing judge in the world. And she's written a book with co-author Rich Hirschlag, who is a graduate of Princeton University and the co-author of several books, including Sinatra, Gotti, and Me, with Tony DelVecchio. And their book is entitled The Lady is a Champ. And this book pulls, you should pardon the expression, no punches. It's a story that inspires women and a woman's story that will floor boxing fans. Carol has officiated at 27 title fights, plus two high-profile non-title heavyweight fights with Mike Tyson and Larry Holmes. Sound familiar? She's a single parent, a recent cancer survivor, and when push comes to shove, she lets nothing prevent her from taking charge of her life. Welcome Carol Polis and Rich Hirschlag to WDIY.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Well, Carol, you have led a most interesting life. And how in the world did you become involved with boxing? Were you a boxing fan? Was your dad a boxing fan?
No, I wasn't. Neither was my father. Of course, we didn't get television until I was 16, but I never saw him watch a fight. I was married at the time, and my husband was a referee, the one in the ring. And he was also a stockbroker. So to have more things in common, I got my stockbroker's license and also used to go to the fights actually being dragged with him. And I hated them. I thought they were cruel. I could never understand why the bleeding wasn't stopped by either the referee or the ring doctors, because the judge can't, you know, doesn't have that power to stop the fight. Could never understand it, and I didn't like it at all.
So you went along to be, you were trying to be a good partner.
I was trying to be a good partner, and then one night, my partner taught me how to keep score in a program, the back of a program, while he was refereeing in the ring, and truthfully, he gave me no more than a 10-second lesson. So I did the best I could with a lesson. We started off in the 70s with a 5-point must system, and now it's a 10-point must system. And at the end of the evening, he said he was going to turn it into our commissioner at the time, who was Zach Clayton, a former Harlem Globetrotter as well as a baseball player in the Negro League. And I really begged him not to do it in all seriousness because I didn't want to make a fool of myself. Who wants to turn in their score with a 10-second lesson? But he did it anyway, and Zach looked at it and he said, I like this better than the men. Keep doing it. And I thought he was kidding, but he sent me a rules and regulations book, which was very thick, but little. And it took me a year and a half to get through, and I guess you could say the oral part of any type of an exam was when I went to the fights and he would ask me on-the-spot questions. And also, the written part would have been when I turned in sporadic scores that he could compare with the men. And then one night, he came to me at intermission. He always called me lady, never by name. And he said, we've got some good news for you. And I said, what is that? He said, well, good and bad. I said, give me the bad news first. I lived in Fort Washington at the time, and he said, next Thursday, my husband and I would go up to Harrisburg, which is only 2 hours away. So that wasn't too bad. But the good news was that I would be appointed as the first woman with Governor Milton Schaap, professional boxing judge in the USA. A few years later, I found out it was really the world, but at the time it was, you know, the USA.
Carol, what year was that?
I was appointed February 1st, 1973.
So that was, you know, that was just at the beginning of the women's movement, kind of, wouldn't you say, Carol?
Yes, and I wasn't involved in anything like that. This was just something that happened, and I went to the fights because of my husband, and I had no interest, but... Then when the commissioner showed an interest in me, I started to develop one. But I studied for a year and a half and proved myself, and that's why I was appointed.
Well, that's amazing, because what you're saying is you really didn't have, you weren't promoting women in the boxing ring.
Absolutely
you
didn't, not.
You weren't promoting, quote-unquote, a cause. You happened to be part of your husband's life. He was a referee, and he asked you to come, and he gave you a card, he gave you a program, I guess, and he said, come on, here, try, and you learned.
And I did real quickly, very quickly.
That's amazing. The fact that you learned in 10 seconds is the amazing part of it.
I find it that way even at this late date, yes.
Well, that is amazing. Good for
you.
Good for you. So you went on to become, so Zach Layton, who was Zach Layton exactly?
He was the boxing commissioner here in Philadelphia. And as I said, he was a former Harlem Globetrotter as well as a baseball player in the Negro League. He was a famous athlete. He was also a boxing referee himself. He did the Rumble in the Jungle with Ali and Foreman in 76, I think it was.
I'm just going to turn for a moment now to Rich Hirschlag, who co-wrote this book with you. And I must say, Rich, this book is so interesting because it really captures Carol's voice. I don't feel that there is a, quote-unquote, a narrator. I just feel that you've captured Carol's voice.
Well, thank you so much. That's like the highest compliment you can pay me. That is, when I do a memoir, that is what I try to do. Just like in this interview, you won't find me jumping in all over the place. It's not a question of imposing my point of view or myself. I kind of think of it as method acting, where you're trying to just get so familiar with the character that it comes out of your pen naturally. So thank you.
Uh-huh. And how did you become involved with Carol?
Well, I'm friends with her son. So he's a great guy, Ken Sharp, and he's a writer as well.
Uh-huh.
So you know, I wouldn't want to write a book about my dad per se. And, you know, so we had this discussion where we kind of funny a few years ago where I said, okay, you take this book and I'll take that book, because we were dividing up projects. And I said, well, if it's okay, I'd love to do this book with your mom. And he's like, please do. Because it's not a project for me.
Well spoken, Bob, like a true son. Wouldn't you agree, Carol?
Oh, yes.
Yes. I think my children would have the same view. So, Carol, in your adventures, we're not going to go necessarily in sequential order, if that's okay with you.
Certainly.
One of the things that I admired about you and your ability to take charge of your life. Well, you did so many things with the family. You raised four children and eventually raised a grandchild, which we'll get into in a little bit. But there was something about you that really epitomizes what this program is all about. You really took charge of your life. Not that you weren't scared. Not that you didn't have, you know, reservations and some concerns. But I'm thinking in particular about your desire to get with Rocky, to get in the movie Rocky V. But before you go there, I just want to let the audience know that you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life, and this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host, and tonight I'm speaking with Carol Polis, who's a champ as a judge, first woman judge in the professional boxing. And I'm speaking with co-author Richard Hirschlag. And they've written a wonderful book that you won't be able to put down, really. It's called The Lady is a Champ. And I was particularly intrigued by your desire to get into the movies.
And Rocky movie?
Yeah, the Rocky V movie.
Yes, okay. Well, there were 4 days of shooting, and I didn't do anything when they shot Rocky I, but I thought, you know, why not? I had nothing to do at the time, so I went down and to a fight club, and this is where the beginning interviews were held, and I was one of the ones that was picked. And I was wandering around the set one day, and I saw the assistant director, who had to be 7 feet tall. Well, I've never reached 5'1", so maybe he was more like 6'5", but he looked 7 feet to me. So I went over to him, and I thought, you know, it's now or never. And I said, hi, his name was Cliff. I said, hi, Cliff, I just want you to know life imitates art or art imitates life. And I really am a boxing judge in real life. And he looked at me and said, sure, mm-hmm. Anyway, I gave him my card, so he did look at it, and he saw that it was imprinted that I was a judge. So I said, I would really love to be in, you know, the final fight scene and sit in my seat when we go to Convention Hall, when the big fight scene is being held. And he didn't say a word. So I went, and I figured I'll just sit there. I was in the back row. I mean, you know, it was just an exciting experience for me, seeing how the movie was made and so forth. I couldn't have been there more than 3 minutes when I heard over the loudspeaker, would the lady boxing judge please report to ringside? Well, you would have thought I had wings. I flew up, and there was Cliff. I never thought in a million years he would pay attention to what I had said or remember me. And he said, here, sit here, and that was the extent of our conversation. And there I sat for 2 days.
And that's how you got into the movie Rocky V.
That's it.
Well, that is wonderful. That's a lesson, because I know in the back of your mind, as you mentioned in the book, you were kind of reticent. I mean, you were not alone. There were thousands of people there.
Thousands of people, but I don't know. I'm just from the my makeup is that if you want something badly enough, you just go after it. You don't think that much about it. Just do it.
Yeah, I think that's what I got from reading about your life. And it wasn't that you weren't afraid, but you put that aside. I mean, you did have those questions like all these people, or, you know, you had some of those questions, but you didn't let it rule your life.
Absolutely not.
Many people do that, and it prevents them from moving ahead. And you said, never mind. Go ahead.
And I would add also, there's some irony here, which is that this was maybe 1990, and Carol had proven herself 17 years earlier as a judge. Here she was basically trying to convince the movies that she really is one. Now can I simply play one in the movies? And the answer for a few days was no, until it was finally yes. So sometimes you have to, it's not, life isn't just about proving yourself, it's about reproving yourself.
Yeah, and also hanging in there and being and following your own true course. And we're going to talk more with Carol Polis about some of the other interesting events in her life, her episodes and experiences in South America, surviving the Argentine
regime.
Thank you. And we're going to learn more about Carol Polis, The Lady is a Champ, when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
WDIY reaches a well-informed and passionate listening audience every day. Enhance your image with our community by becoming an underwriting supporter. Spread the word about your business in an uncluttered atmosphere of high-quality NPR and locally produced programming. Underwriting is an affordable way to reach the public radio audience, and it may be tax-deductible. To learn more, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. This is Eleanor Barbaro, your host, and this evening we're talking with Carol Polis, who is the first woman professional boxing judge in the world, and co-author Rich Hirschlag. And we're talking about some of the many interesting events that Carol went through as the first woman judge of boxing in the professional world. You were part of the professional world, Carol, as well as what other part of the boxing world? How is it described?
Amateur.
Okay.
No, I'm strictly professional.
You were strictly professional.
Yes.
Excellent. So now you had some association with some very famous boxers that many of the audience will know, even whether or not they're boxing fans, like you met Mike Tyson.
I met him. I met Muhammad Ali. That was a nice one.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Mike Tyson's going to be on Broadway in a one-man show starting this weekend. What was your connection with Mike Tyson?
Well, I met him at a fight I was doing down south. He was in the audience with his girlfriend of the week. And he was depressed because the fighter in the fight that he had been in the Olympics with lost. So he wasn't, you know, in a mood to talk. But I've seen him around, and I also judged one of his fights, and I was able to say hello. That's about it, because he was always surrounded with a large contingency of people.
Right. And as I want the audience to know, as a judge, you're not allowed to associate with any of the fighters. Is that correct?
No, you're not really.
Not really. But what about Muhammad Ali?
Well, I had a nice experience there. I went to his training camp in Deer Lake, Pennsylvania. And he was sitting there doing magic tricks with the kids, and I sat down and chatted with him for a good half an hour. And I asked him a couple of questions. One was, your fists are considered lethal weapons outside of the ring. Do many men try to pick a fight with you? And then he shook his finger at me. I thought my father was there, and he said, it takes a man to walk away from a fight. And I've mentioned that to so many different fellas, and it's true. And then I asked him, when you step into the square circle, which is what we call the ring, are you ever afraid? And he said, anyone that tells you they don't get butterflies is not telling you the truth. And then he took a picture of me. It was a riot. He had me standing between his cook, I forget her name, I have it in my scrapbook, and one of his security guards. So I was in the center of two black people, and he said he called it his Oreo cookie shot. So he was a lot of fun. He was a lot of fun. He was easy to talk to.
Now, were people accepting of you in the ring as a judge? Did you have any that were protests? One comes to mind, like the marvelous Marvin Hagler.
They just didn't want three women. They didn't like the idea of three women. It's a shame. I did another fight that same night, but which was an excellent fight. So it really didn't matter to me. It's just the prestige of doing a Hagler fight, because he was more important, you know, in the world of boxing than the fight I did.
I think we just need to do a little backup. What you're saying is that that particular fight, instead of having like two men and a woman judge, or they had three women, and that was the basis of the protest.
Well, his trainers and managers, the Petronelli brothers, didn't want three women. They were against women participating in their fight, so they only used one. And the one they used was the one whose husband was a referee. He's no longer living, and neither is she, Eve Shane. She was a wonderful judge and a good friend of mine. And they used her because she had a lot of influence in New York. And so I couldn't get in touch with my commissioner, or as he told me later, he certainly would have gone to bat for me. So that's the way it worked out, but it was just one of those things.
Rich, do you have a favorite incident with Carol at all? With some of the boxers, or?
Well, I have a few, obviously.
Yes.
Having worked on this for years, but one that comes to mind is 1974. Carol's, not that she hadn't been to New York before, but her boxing introduction to New York, which was a fight at the Felt Forum. I think Carol should talk about that a little bit, but I found it very much of the times, and when I picture The Lady as a Champ as a movie, I picture this scene in here.
Oh, and what year was that?
74.
74. Carol, tell us about your introduction to New York boxing at the Felt Forum.
Well, that was only about a little over a year after I had been appointed, and it was a very close fight between an Italian and a Puerto Rican, and I scored it the way I saw it, which is the way I think you should score a fight. But the audience was made up of mainly Puerto Ricans. And I called that night the night the natives grew restless. They tore up the seats. They set fire to things. They threw a sofa. And there was a bottle, I don't know what kind of liquor, because I don't drink, but it was a bottle of liquor that whizzed by my right ear that I could draw. It was so close. So they put me behind a curtain. And then when the commotion settled down, they brought me back out again. So it was not a pleasant experience.
How does that compare with your experience in Argentina?
Oh, I love my experience in Argentina. I found it very interesting because...
What brought you to Argentina?
Pardon me?
What brought you to Argentina?
You get scheduled, you get a telegram, you're scheduled to, I was scheduled for this title fight.
And so when you say, just a moment, Carol, before you go there, when you say you got scheduled, does that mean that they pay your flight, they pay you for appearing? How does
and
that
they
go?
Also pay where you stay and for your food, yes.
Uh-huh.
The World Boxing Association assigned me to the fight, and they sent me a telegram. And I appeared, you know, in Buenos Aires, and then we flew from there to Cordoba, which was about an hour flight, and very austere generals and who knows what they were. They had a million badges, ribbons, and medals all over their jackets, and they were a very grim-looking group. And I was introduced to all these people, which looked like a firing squad to me. But they needed, I speak some Italian and French, but very little Spanish, so they needed an interpreter. And one of the generals asked me, which I decided, I've got to loosen up this crowd. One of the generals said to me, "How old are your children?" in Spanish. They translated it for me, and I said in English, "In the United States, we don't discuss the ages of our children because that gives our age away." So it was funny watching it go down the line when with the interpreter, and they all got a big smile on their face. And then I forget what they were asking me, different questions, and I said something about, "In the United States, wrinkled is in because my suitcase arrived 2 days after I did, so I'm still wrinkled," and they laughed. So it became a very friendly group, believe it or not, and it was really frightening to see them in the beginning.
Well, you certainly made the best of that situation, and so really nothing seems to floor you. Now, one of the things I'd like, you know, we are talking about you as a first lady judge in the boxing world, but, you know, at the same time, I want our listening audience to know that as a woman, and you are the mother of four children.
Yes.
And you raised four children. Basically, would you say a single mother?
Well, in and out. I was married more than once, so I was partially married and partially single.
And then how did you come to take care of your grandson?
Well, because my youngest daughter got in with the wrong crowd and drugs were involved, and somebody responsible had to take over, and there was no way I was going to not take over. I felt it was my responsibility. This is how I was raised, and that was it, and I can't tell you how lucky I've been. He's a fabulous fella.
Well, I think he's the one that's lucky.
Well, he is too, but I am also. He's just a great guy.
Yes. So being a judge, being a boxing judge, was not paying you professionally, because you also had to work at other jobs to create an income in order to raise your family.
Well, they pay you at a fight. They don't pay you very much when you do a fight. Title fight, they pay quite well. But that might be once or at the very most twice a year. So I worked at, you know, different jobs and was able to make ends meet. And that's the way it went. And everything worked out.
So you worked very hard. You had several jobs. Plus, you also worked in the ring as a judge when you were called. Tell us about... were you in Italy when this fight happened, with the mother?
Yes.
Tell us
and
about
Italy
that.
Italy is my favorite country beside my own. I love Italy.
Okay.
Yes, there was usually the host country always has a terrific party after the fight, which I always look forward to. But in particular, Italy, because they have the best food in the world, in my opinion. And this was a fight between, let's see, what was his name? Lori Steca, and I forget the Puerto Rican fella's name. And they were fighting, and it was a good fight, and I think the Italian was winning. But all of a sudden, he had his jaw broken. The fight was stopped. His mother jumped in the ring, took off her shoe, and went after the Puerto Rican fighter, which is so typical of what they do in Italy. That's why I love the people there so much. They're very emotional, and they're very, everything's out front. Nothing's, don't say this, don't say that, don't do this. I mean, they're just real open, great people, and I relate to them very well.
That was a mom who took over also.
So she took over for her, she was protecting her son.
She certainly was, yeah. But the Italians didn't show up for the party afterwards. The rest of us did, but they were bad sports. They didn't show up, but it was a great party. The food was terrific, so We didn't care.
So what you're saying is that when the Italian contender lost, they boycotted the party.
They didn't go. The top people did not show up, which is so typical there as well.
Did they feel the ruling was unfair?
I have no idea. They're just bad sport. They were just being bad sport. So, but it didn't hurt the party any.
Something about Italy that I remember that you were, before a fight or after a fight, you had some off time, and you were, I'm going to guess Rome, but you were somewhere in a taxi cab where you were recognized. And I'll let you tell that little story that the taxi cab driver recognized you, and you, and that the Italian people, according to him, actually had an opinion about you.
I don't remember that.
That you were in a cab. Well, yeah, it's.
You know, I don't remember that story.
Yeah,
Isn't that odd?
Yeah, probably like page 212. The cab driver said the Italian people know you and they think you're a very fair judge.
That's very nice to hear again.
Yeah, no, and that it was kind of thrilling because you don't go around the world expecting to be recognized like Muhammad Ali.
But you were.
In other words, some people are such good boxing fans, and it did, not just that it happened, but that it happened in your second favorite country. I thought that was one of those golden moments.
It was a golden moment, from what you said. I vaguely remember that.
Well, I want to say the golden moment for all of us in the Lehigh Valley and all over is the publishing of this wonderful book called "The Lady Is a Champ," and it's going to be in the bookstores very shortly at Barnes & Noble's, and we look forward.
It's available on Amazon now.
Okay. So
Amazon, Nook, and Kindle, and also velocitybooks.org.
I want to thank you so much, Carol Polis, the first woman professional boxing judge in the world, and Rich Hirschlag, co-author of The Lady is a Champ, for helping us to take charge of our lives, and it's not always easy. It means gathering up who we are, knowing what we want in life, and scared or not, not predicting the outcome, but going for the gold. Thank you, Rich Hirschlag, Carol Polis, for an inspiring book, not only about becoming the world's first professional boxing woman judge, but a story about going for life with gusto. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.